The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
We shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
American prosperity is the bedrock of freedom and security all over the world.
An obligation to the heritage of liberty and dignity handed down to us by our forefathers.
It's time for the Pro-America Report with Ed Martin on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro-America Report. Great to be together. Don't forget, visit ProAmericaReport.com, ProAmericaReport.com. Get yourself updated on everything that's going on right there. That's the most important place you can go for the truth, for the truth. Now, I woke up on Monday morning and I thought I'd be talking about bloodbath. Bloodbath was the newest hoax, of the hoax makers. The hoax makers who love to do things like the Russia hoax, the Charlottesville fine people hoax, all these different hoaxes. Gotta wonder, don't you, if COVID was a hoax? But that's another question for another day. The bloodbath hoax is that Donald Trump was talking about how if he doesn't become president, the rapid deterioration of jobs in the country will continue. And he said, you know, if I'm not in there, it'll be a bloodbath in terms of jobs. Well, the media seized on this and said, look at this, it's violent rhetoric. And they went on and on and on and embarrassed themselves. I got a text from somebody over the weekend who's, I think he's probably conservative generally, but he's certainly not automatically Trumpist in his makeup. And he said, these people are embarrassing themselves. And I agree. They're embarrassing themselves in their zeal to make up the next hoax. It also feels a little desperate. And couple that with a detail, which I'll go into later on this week. I've been tracking the number of senior White House officials leaving. And yes, it's true that by the time you get to this point in an election cycle, you're spending most of the life of the White House is on reelection. There's not a lot of legislative stuff going on, but there's a lot of politics going on. And some of the big hitters have been leaving the White House. Are they jumping from a fading and failing ship, a sinking ship? We'll talk about that later on in the week. But first, major story today. Major story today. The headline of which I would say here on the Pro-America Report could be this. Is it time for another Reese Committee? In 1952 to 1954, there was a committee made up of Congressman Reese, I think from Georgia, by the way, which is kind of a rich irony because, of course, the leading committee right now that is taking up these questions of misconduct by the previous Congress and others is, of course, a congressman. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I got it wrong. A congressman Reese. Congressman Reese was from Tennessee. And but the other member was that's right. The other member was Cox. So Reese and Cox were on this committee. It alternatively was called the Cox Committee and also the Reese Committee. Cox is from Georgia. So is Barry Loudermilk, who's heading up the House Administration Committee. But here's what the Reese Committee did. By 1952, we had seen in the country that there was a disproportionate impact of these organizations that had been founded by very, very wealthy Americans. And they had set up a nonprofit tax-exempt foundations. Rockefeller Foundation was one. I think Carnegie had one. And they were running them under the tax code. And so they were tax-exempt. And tax-exempt at the time was not just tax deductibility. It was more importantly that you didn't pay taxes on other things you were doing. You didn't have to pay sales tax, for example. You didn't have to pay taxes. I mean, you were exempt broadly. So the Reese Committee, I'll call it, and it generated something called the Cox Report. But the Reese Committee went ahead and dug into this. And actually, the report, I apologize, I'm slipping. The report was called Dodd. The Dodd report was done by Norman Dodd, who was the executive director of that committee. And so the Reese Committee digs into these foundations. They basically found out that they were running a scam, you know, running with very little supervision, with very little ability to know what they're doing, and getting a huge benefit. Well, the story that's out today from DeRoy Murdoch, the journalist who is so good and sort of a long form investigative journalist, came out late last night. And the fact is this: Georgetown Law School, protected by a 501c3 tax exempt status, getting huge benefits by that status, tax exempt from paying taxes, tax exempt in terms of getting contributions that pay for it. And DeRoy Murdoch, who himself graduated from Georgetown University broadly, wrote this incredible piece in the American Spectator, which catalogs that many of the most prominent and influential of the anti-Trumpers end up at Georgetown Law School. So you say, well, how can that be? I mean, was that really possible? Yeah, it's really possible. And it's not just John Podesta. You know, John Podesta is an obvious one. Peter Strzok, should be disgraced member of the FBI, right? He's the guy that had this extramarital affair and was saying, don't worry, we'll get an insurance policy, we'll get him, all that kind of stuff. Peter Strzok. So you got John Podesta, Peter Strzok, but even those are not the big ones. The big ones at this point you have to focus on are a woman named Mary McCord. Mary McCord has been, you know, at the center of a lot of the opposition to Donald Trump, lawfare opposition. She served in the administration. She's now executive director of a special project. And she, when she was in the administration, she was in the Defense Department. She's written and talked about how it's so important to stop Trump. She's written and talked about, she participated in Mike Flynn, in the Mike Flynn framing, the frame up there. She's worked with Michael Atkinson, remember that, to create that fraudulent whistleblower complaint. She's been in the middle of all this stuff. And another woman named Rosa Brooks. Now, Rosa Brooks has a really senior job over at Georgetown. She's a professor and associate dean for what's called centers and institutes. So she makes up these institutes. That's what Mary McCord heads up. She heads up an institute now. They make up these institutes. They go out, a lot of times they go out and say to donors, hey, give us money. It's like David Brock does. David Brock goes to donors and says, here's a plan, $10 million. I'll go set up these nonprofits and I'll do this. Well, Georgetown University School of Law is running this for leftists opposing Trump. You need to read this extraordinary piece from DeRoy Murdoch. And you need to get to the very last line and you'll see what DeRoy sees. Here's the last sentence. Congressional investigators should answer these questions and give Georgetown University the tough love it needs to become once again the center of balanced intellectual inquiry that I recall so fondly. He went there. Georgetown University received $970 million over a six-year period, almost $1 billion. Can you believe it? I mean, we're talking about real serious, serious money, federal tax dollars. And when you read the specifics, he calls it, of course, DeRoy Murdoch is a very gifted writer, and he has a great title for it. And the title is, of course, make you smile, Hoyagate, Georgetown Law is Vatican of Trump Hatred. And then the subheadline is the one that pays. Despite enjoying tax-exempt status, the institution is viciously partisan. That right there, my friends, is what you call the phrase that pays. Because that says it all, and it is really clear, and you don't need any doubt, viciously partisan. I think, you know, whether it's a Reese committee or whether it's a some kind of investigation coming out of Congressman Barry Loudermilk's House Admin Subcommittee on Oversight, whatever it is, the reality is that something's got to give. And let me be clear, you know, there's a number of ways that an examination of Georgetown law could lead to understanding what the universities are doing. It also could lead to what nonprofits are doing. There's a lot of nonprofits that are set up that hide behind that that sort of sheen of protection because they are a nonprofit. And a lot of times they are, you know, CREW is an example, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. That was set up. That's just a pure front group that is designed to attack Republicans. They don't hide it. They don't hide it at all. I mean, it is not something that they're shy about when you go look at CREW. But so my point here is that a Reese committee that would start with the Georgetown law problem and perhaps focus on universities only, but could expand to others, it's probably necessary. And it would lead to a lot of questions. because there are thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of nonprofits have started, and many, many of them are of course actually just, you know, trying to do good things, and they're not nefarious, and they may be set up to take advantage of the tax code, but they're not set up to take advantage of we the people. They're not doing that. But the conversation about the ones that are gaming the system, another example is Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is a 501c3. Planned Parenthood of the United States does so many abortions in this country. In fact, the dominant abortion provider, they are 501c3. They receive, is it $654 billion per year? Maybe higher than that. I'm embarrassed to say that I don't have it off the top of my head. I've been talking about it for weeks. So they receive, by the way, close to $1 billion of tax-exempt dollars when you add in USAID, foreign aid that goes to a Planned Parenthood International. So that's another example. But my point here is you also sweep up some nonprofits that are about, you know, getting books to schools and things that we would want to do. And you say, well, it's going to be damaging. No, yeah, maybe. But we have to have some sort of accountability. We have, because we're creating this separate class of basically quasi-government entities. Planned Parenthood with $1 billion of U.S. money. You know, Georgetown University with $1 billion of U.S. money over five or six years. And then using it to play partisan politics. You don't see Hillsdale doing that. You don't see Hoover Institution over at Stanford doing that. You just don't see it. There's no evidence of that. And so it's a one-sided use of those, which is the same thing that happened when the Reese Committee started. So there you have it. Take a look. I'll post this article up on social media. Very important. Very important. Georgetown Hoyagate. Hoyagate and the new Reese Committee needed. Be back in a moment. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Welcome back. Welcome back. Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. If by popular demand, well, I'll just admit one person said to me one time, John Schlafly, who's our next guest, you know, you always finish abruptly with John Schlafly. You got more to say. You should talk to him longer. And I wish I could say it was your mother, but your mother is deceased. It wasn't her. It wasn't anybody we knew. It was just someone who listens to the show, actually has a podcast, and said, I want to hear more John Schlafly. So today we're going to give you a special double John Schlafly. John Schlafly, of course, writes a weekly column with his brother, Andy. It's called The Schlafly Report. It takes two Schlafly children to do what Phyllis Schlafly did herself, which was a weekly column for decades and decades. But they do pull it off. It is worth noting that two siblings doing something like that every week. There ought to be a pay-per-view, kind of video thing of the two brothers negotiating what the topics are. I have a little bit of insight and how it should look and editing and all. It's quite an achievement. So welcome back, John. And this week you're down at the border again. Let Texas secure the border. Walk us through what you and Andy are pushing here. I know the Attorney General Ken Paxton plays a big role in what's happening down there. Well, walk us through this.
Well, as you know, Ed, we're big fans of Texas Attorney General Paxton, and he's brought really hundreds of cases, and many of them relate to protecting the border. And, of course, the vast majority of the illegal migrants have crossed the border into Texas. So it's a critical issue for Texas, and yet Texas is being prevented by the Biden administration from protecting that border. There have been a series of cases about that. You may recall the case involving the orange buoys that
floated in the
river. Well, that case is still pending. Then there, you may remember the case involving the not really barbed wire, but concertina wire, which is different. But Texas set up concertina wire, also known as razor wire, to protect a park in Eagle Pass along the border. I like that name for that town. It's a small town, but it was overrun by 100,000 people. Anyway, but no, the latest conflict, which is now, once again, the Biden administration took Texas to the U.S. Supreme Court, has to do with the law called SB4, which the Texas legislature last year passed and Governor Abbott signed, but it was to take effect just this week. And so the Biden administration went to court and asked for a court order to prevent the Texas law from being enforced. So what does this law do? This Texas law, SB 4, it authorized Texas to, first of all, if migrants are trespassing on private property, they can be arrested and prosecuted, and then they can be taken to the border. Now, Texas cannot literally deport somebody. Only the federal government can do that. But what the law authorizes Texas to do is to escort these illegal migrants to a port of entry. Mind you, these people crossed not at a port of entry. They just crossed in the middle of the Grand or Rio Grande or in some unguarded area, and that's how they got in. But the law requires people to show up at a port of entry. That means there are Border Patrol or other federal officials on hand right there to stop them, question them, identify them, and either allow them in or refuse them. And so this Texas SB 4 law would allow Texas Rangers to deliver illegal aliens to the port of entry and then hand them off to federal agents to send them back to Mexico. That is the theory behind this. And it's a great idea, except that Biden is not going along with it. And, you know, we all listened to Biden at the State of the Union address, where he, in an unguarded moment, thanks to Marjorie Taylor Greene, he referred to them as illegals, and his whole left flank went into a complete outrage about that, went into a tizzy about that. And they forced President Biden to apologize
for
calling them illegals. Oh, he said, no, we've got to treat these people with respect. We're not, it was a mistake to call them illegal. And he said they were undocumented. Now, of course, that's not totally untrue. They're not undocumented. For one thing, they've been given documents by the Border Patrol under Biden's orders. They were given documents. So they have documents.
John, let me pause you for a second. We're talking with John Schlafly. His column, Let Texas Secure the Border, posted over at phyllisschlafly.com. It walks you through this. But pause for a second, John. For the layman, John Schlafly is an attorney, actually has an advanced degree in tax law also, and has written for decades now with his late mother, Phyllis Schlafly, and on many of these topics. But John, pull back for a second. When I just did a segment on the program about how the creeping sovereignty grab of the EU, of Washington, D.C., against, in the case of the EU, against member nations, in the case of America, against the states. What is the argument that says the federal government gets total control at the border? The Constitution, it does say that the federal government has this role, but it's not everything, right? I mean, in other words, it doesn't say we hold the right to the borders and you get nothing. How would you describe that balance to a layman?
Well, like many things in the United States Constitution, there's a balance between federal authority and state authority. And so the Constitution does say that the Congress has authority to prescribe uniform rules about doesn't use the word immigration, but it slipped my mind exactly what the word is, but it amounts to immigration, and the word uniform is there.
Right.
So the point is, you know, no state can have its own immigration policy,
right?
Because once people are allowed in, you know, they don't stay in that state. They can go anywhere they want. So there's uniform policy, and there's many laws that have been passed over the last 200 years relating to immigration and naturalization. And but on the other hand, there are two other provisions of the Constitution that refer to states' rights to protect themselves against invasion.
Right.
And Texas has argued that that's exactly what's going on right now. Texas is being invaded by hundreds of thousands of people who are being supported by an armed force. Now, the migrants are not armed, but they're being supported by the drug cartels.
Right.
And that really should be viewed as an invasion. And Texas cannot be forced to sit idly by and do nothing while hundreds of thousands of people are streaming across the border who have no legal right to enter.
John, so Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution grants Congress the responsibility, quote, to establish an uniform rule of naturalization. That's what we basically say. You can't be Texas and tell people whether they can come visit our nation. You have to let people in, and the federal government will be the one that, under the Constitution, that decides how you become a citizen. It really doesn't say about to your point. That's limited. It's not a plenary. Yeah. A grant.
And to carry out that provision that you just read, Ed, Congress has passed many laws relating to uniform rules of people coming and going into the United States. The trouble is Biden is not enforcing them.
Right.
And so the question then arises, if there is an unenforced federal law,
right,
can a state such as Texas step up and say, well, this is federal law, and we support federal law. And if the federal government is letting the law go unenforced, we're going to step into that breach and help you enforce.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Again, now, but we're talking with John Schlafly. John, let me just say now we're in Article 4, Section 4. United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a Republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. And the idea then is, well, if the federal government's not protecting you against invasion, you obviously have a right to do that. In other words, you cannot say you have no right to protect yourself from invasion if you're saying the federal government, as part of this deal, will play that role. But if they don't play the role, you still can play it. You don't lose it. You're not granting that right. I mean, this is that tension. Let me take a break, John, because we're up against a stop. We'll take a break and be right back. We'll talk with John Schlafly. We'll continue talking with him after the break. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back, everybody. Ed Martin talking with John Schlafly, as requested by one of our listeners. Longer time, longer term, longer John Schlafly. So here we are. John, this showdown with the Constitution, though, we were talking about before we went to the break. So you have the federal government. The argument has to be the federal government's not doing its job, therefore we're doing ours. And is that what we're waiting for or in the courts? Or is this one of those political arguments, you know, that the courts are saying, yeah, the grant of your sovereignty, we the people, to the states, into a federal government, you got to sort that out with politics.
No, it's like everything else in our country now, it's the court case. And so the Justice Department sued Texas, and also the ACLU brought a separate suit against Texas. And both of these suits really make the same argument, which is that the Texas cannot be allowed to step in and help the federal government. Biden should be allowed to leave federal law unenforced, and Texas just has to live with that. That's the argument they're making. And that issue is pending before the Fifth Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, which is generally conservative, but the other side is not waiting for that court to rule. Instead, they've gone all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court on an emergency basis, and they want the U.S. Supreme Court to stop Texas law immediately, like today, without waiting for the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to have a full hearing and write their whole analysis, which eventually will happen, and then it'll go back to the Supreme Court probably next year. But they're trying to nip this in the bud because, you know, next year, of course, Biden hopefully won't be there anymore.
Right.
And what they want to do is Biden's bound and determined to bring in as many of these illegal people as he possibly can during his 4-year terms in office. you know, betting that once they're in, they'll never be removed.
John, I have always thought, let me segue a little bit. We're talking with John Schlafly. You must read his column. He and Andy, they are almost always, I can't say, 9 out of 10 times, they're writing about a topic that nobody else is covering the way they are, and you're going to learn something. The 10th out of 10, I think, is probably where John loses a fight with Andy over the topic, and they cover something that's still interesting, but maybe not as relevant. But anyway, but John, here's my question. Did Elon Musk stumble onto the real truth of what the Democrats are doing? Because for many, many Americans, they look up and say, even though the Democrat Party is crazy on a lot of stuff, we don't understand how you can defend 10 million people coming into a broken immigration system and being awash with this country, especially when, again, the evidence is clear. It's not family of four with Our Lady of Guadalupe icon coming across the border. There's some of that, but mostly in these 10 million, it's been military. Age is the way they say it, or you know, young people that are unaccompanied minors. It's just a mess. And Elon Musk in the last week or so has tweeted a number of times something that you've written about for a decade and your late mother wrote about for 25 years, which is the census. That as a political matter, yes, it's true that illegals may eventually be able to vote in some crazy places. They can vote now. New York City, I think, considers it for some things, or maybe in San Francisco, but that's a long way off. But in the short term, it really does distort the census. And the census is the best path to political power. If you had a real census of American citizens, I think you probably could eliminate, you would have a 15 to 20 members. I don't know the number. You correct me. In the House would switch parties because of this. Tell us, walk us through this, and that Musk is on this, which is something you were on a long time ago.
Well, Elon Musk is a very smart man. And yes, he has seized upon this point, which many people still don't get, which is that even if non-citizens don't vote, of course, they're not supposed to vote, but just the mere fact that they're a body taking up space is they're ordinarily counted in the census every 10 years. And that means they contribute to the number of congressional districts and the number of electoral votes that the state where they're living on April 1st in the census year gets allocated. And as you say, that it results in the shift of probably, you know, dozen or maybe two dozen seats from between the states, because the state is apportioned the number of seats in the House of Representatives and in the Electoral College based on, as the Constitution says, the Constitution is based on numbers. It doesn't say citizens. It says numbers. And the general theory is that anybody who isn't a visitor, now, you know, tourists are not counted,
right,
but anybody who is a resident, regardless of their citizenship status, is supposed to be counted in the census. And if we have 10 million, of course, we had 11 million already, but if we have 10 million more, that's 21 at least million. And those people, they're not evenly distributed across the United States. They are concentrated in a few states, and the states where they're concentrated will get more votes in
right.
the House and in the Electoral College, and even within a state, they're concentrated. So I saw some figures that Maxine Waters, for example, who's one of our, is probably not one of your listeners' favorite members
right.
of Congress.
Right.
But her district happens to be a district that is concentrated with a very disproportionate number of non-citizens. And so the number of people who actually vote for Maxine Waters is fairly small. But she casts her the same vote in Congress
right.
as every yeah. other member of Congress. And it's the illegal aliens who reside in her district who give her that power.
Well, and say that, and I'll say it clear, John. Maxine Waters sits in a district. What's the total number of people in the census, the count that you're supposed to have the number in a congressional district? Is it 750,000 approximately?
750 to 780,000.
Okay, so let's call it 750,000 people have to reside in your district to get it carved up to be one vote in the House.
Of course. That's, of course, men, women, and children.
Right.
And they don't all they're not eligible to vote. All of them are eligible to vote.
But
there's a lot difference between, you know, your child versus an illegal alien.
Well, right. And but even more importantly, just think about Maxine Waters. She may represent a district in a normal district, let's say a normal 750. Again, I know these are averages, but you'd say, well, a third are going to be under the age of voting. So let's say it's just 500,000 voters. Let's pretend it's 500,000 eligible voters to be represented of 750,000. Not perfect math, but close enough. But in a district like hers, what she gets is a district where she has, let's say, 100,000 illegals can't vote for her. So she's only really representing of voters 400,000. And what happens is in the cities, Chicago, LA, they're happy to load the communities with more illegal immigrants that they can count as residents because it's an increase in power. It's very simple math. John, I hate to say this. It sounds so ridiculous because you and I've been doing this for 20 years together. But to me, I always say politicians care about only two things, money and votes, right? This is the answer to 10 million is not at all, because Joe Biden's not going to live long enough, not making fun of his age. He's not going to live long enough for the amnesty that they're going to try to push in 5 years or 10 years. But the census comes around and it's not that far off again. So that seems to me to at least be a helpful way to look at it for the average person.
Yes. And, you know, congratulations to an immigrant, an African-American immigrant, Elon Musk, for identifying that and bringing that to the attention of the millions of people who follow him on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Well,
that's
and he'll,
a subtle point, but more people need to understand that.
Well, he'll have to be silenced. That's all that's going to happen there. We'll have to find a way to silence him. That may be what this TikTok ban is. A lot of discussion about whether there's that it's really a power grab. All right, John Schlafly, thank you for the extended Schlafly report. We appreciate it. We'll see if this satiates the demand for longer conversation. It is very helpful. Thank you, John. We will take a break, everybody, and we'll be right back. It's Ed Martin here on the Pro America Report. Back in a moment.
This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Phyllis Schlafly Eagles. Mrs. Schlafly was a courageous and articulate voice for traditional values and common sense for more than 70 years. And now, from the archives of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, here is Phyllis Schlafly.
A public school program called Teen Screen subjects teenagers to psychological evaluation, labeling, and stigmatizing. Teen Screen is marketed as a voluntary mental health checkup. It's supposed to identify teenagers at risk for suicide. Though it claims to be voluntary, and despite assurances that parental rights will be respected, the psychological evaluation is given to many students without meaningful notice and consent. A 15-year-old high school sophomore in Indiana named Chelsea Rhodes was given this psychological assessment in 2004. She was pulled out of class, told to sign a form, never told that the test was voluntary. After Chelsea had completed the screening, she was told that she had obsessive compulsive disorder for cleaning and social anxiety disorder, and that she should seek treatment. That stigmatized her as having a psychiatric disorder. Chelsea Rhodes and her parents filed suit against the school, complaining that their constitutional rights had been violated. They sought damages due to the school not obtaining parental consent before the test and for diagnosing Chelsea without due care. The public school expected to win in court. After all, public schools usually do win in court. The school insisted that Teen Screen was optional and confidential and that there was no compulsion or harm. To the school's amazement, the court held in favor of parental rights. The court was impressed by the absence of any evidence that any students had declined taking the test. The court held that the students simply signed the form because they were told to do so and did not understand they had a choice. Parents, if your children are in public school, you should warn them not to answer any of these nosy questionnaires or surveys that are not academic and which ask for answers to privacy-invading questions that are absolutely none of the school's business.
Thanks for listening to the Phyllis Schlafly Report. You'll be glad to know the legacy of Phyllis Schlafly continues, upheld by Ed Martin, president of Phyllis Schlafly Eagles, Chairman Helen Marie Taylor, Treasurer John Schlafly, a full staff in St. Louis and our nation's capital, and thousands of citizen volunteers, her Eagles, across the country. You can be part of that legacy at PhyllisSchlafly.com. That's PhyllisSchlafly.com.
Welcome back to the Pro America Report. This is Ryan Height here stepping in real quick to help close out the show for Mr. Ed Martin. What a good show there today. Got a couple of great points up at the front, and I wanted to tag on to those real quick. I think there's something that we need to talk about here in the program today that we haven't quite gotten to yet. But before we do that, let me remind you, go over to proamericareport.com. That is where you can find Ed's Substack, see what he is talking about several times a week. The long form, a lot of the same content, or the same topics, I should say, that you'll find here on the Pro America Report, but then also head over to PhyllisSchlafly.com. PhyllisSchlafly.com is where you will find all of the show notes, all of the links and resources, the past podcasts, standalone guests, and let me tell you, boy, we've got some great upcoming guests this week. I am excited about it here on the program. And of course, over at PhyllisSchlafly.com, you can sign up for the all-important, all-helpful, all-early wink email, the What You Need to Know email every morning comes into your inbox every weekday, I should say. It will be a helpful part of your morning routine. If you were on that list, you would have seen what Ed was talking about this morning, something that I think needs to be addressed because it is one of those blatant, what could we say, the hand caught in the cookie jar moments for big media. You know, we talked about at the beginning of the show here, Ed talks about the what I've heard many people refer to as the fourth branch of government, the nonprofits. And sure enough, we've got the guy coming on this week, I hope, talking about Hoyagate, this Georgetown law as the center of Trump hatred and the incredible rash of taxpayer-funded nonprofits that are being used as partisan centers of hatred and the breeding grounds for the new leftist movement. As we're talking about that and marching forward, it's a good time to remind ourselves with something that happened this weekend, just how solidly lockstep so much of, almost all of big media, well, I guess we could say all of big media, because if someone doesn't fall in line lockstep with the leftist point of view, they're probably not part of the big media establishment. But the fake news, the mainstream media is so locked in anti-Trump, anti-anything about Trump or anything having to do with the issues that are what I believe you and I would agree are the common fundamental, you know, foundational belief for most of Americans and for our American values. Hey, stop, you know, things like stop sexualizing kids. Hey, let's not do this at that level. Let's not spend this money that we don't have. Let's not have an open or essentially no border whatsoever. This is not how a nation works. All of these fundamental things, the media fights back and paints this huge picture, this agenda of hatred and bigotry and all the different things, the things that they are guilty of, that they point the finger and claim, oh, all of the right, all of the Make America Great Again, the America First people, those people are the real haters. Well, you and I both know this about the mainstream media, but every once in a while they do something so outlandish that it gives us a really golden opportunity to point it out to people who don't quite understand the fact that the media will go to no, well, they will stop at nothing. They will lie
outright lie. And I know this, and I think that you know this, but there are a lot of people left in America who don't really go for the whole leftist agenda. They haven't adopted all of that. They don't believe in the whole thing, but they don't quite understand yet that what they are watching, if they just casually flip on a cable news network, this isn't truth. This isn't based in fact. This isn't based in any kind of reality. And that's a moment that the mainstream news gave us this weekend. Now, what happened? At an event, at a campaign rally, Donald Trump made a comment. He was talking about importing vehicles from Mexico, new tariffs, how to basically work economically to revitalize the auto industry here in America and stop shipping it overseas or over the border to Mexico. And he talked about how this and this and this need to happen, and if it doesn't, it's going to be horrible. And, you know, if I don't get it elected, it's going to be a bloodbath, and that's the least of the problems. He's talking about the car market. He's talking about the economy. That's literally one of the definitions, if you go to the dictionary, talking about an economic collapse, the bloodbath. Now, a bloodbath, I think you and I both know, means something really, really, really bad. Is it specifically a call to violence? No, never, ever has that been the case. And only until the mainstream media grabs this Trump clip and starts to play it very selectively edited, has it become this. Well, anyone who would use this word, they say, while clutching their pearls, anyone who would use this word is obviously advocating for violence. Yeah, well, that's not true, because he wasn't advocating for violence. And in fact, and it's been great, this is where the internet is a wonderful thing. As bad as the internet is, and it makes our lives worse, I think, that's arguable. It's also great, because now everyone's trotted out the, what did I see, one headline, the almost literally trillions of times that the left-wing media has used the word bloodbath, and obviously they didn't think they were calling for violence. Now, of course, you know, I think they might have been. You and I probably both think they might have been, considering the whole summer of love in 2020 and what happened then. But, of course, they used this phrase, and it was fine when they used it, but it's not fine when Trump uses it, and we're going to selectively add it. Well, it's just so, even Elon Musk, several people who were, what I would say, not conservatives per se, but just honest about, hey, now, hold on, let's be honest here. That's not, in context, what it was said, you know, what was said. This is that moment, because they have so outlandishly clipped this and thrown hissy fits on the air. Joe Scarborough had to go into some potty-mouthed hissy fit over this whole thing. They are essentially trying to reinforce the hoax that they have created of January 6th being an insurrection, and they're going to create a new hoax that Trump is calling for some sort of violent bloodbath again, and that is in fact not anything close to what's happened. All you have to do is watch a literal 90 seconds of video and see that's not even remotely close to what happened. So this is our opportunity to slam the cookie jar down on their hands with anyone who still watches the news and doesn't know that yet they are liars. It's not just kind of spin, they're liars. It's time for you and I to reinforce that. So this bloodbath nonsense, this is the time. So go and tell your friends. We'll grab a clip. I'll drop it into the show notes and into the social media links. Take it. Talk to people. Make sure they're not buying the lies, because this is exactly the kind of election interference and meddling we're going to see the media do all the way through 2024. Don't let them get away with it. So that's it. We're going to close out the program today. Thank you for being with us. Thank you to Ed for being our wonderful host and jumping on here, for letting me come in at the last minute and wrap us up. Thank you to Mason, my co-producer. And thank you to you for listening. We will see you back here on another edition of the Pro America Report tomorrow. Have a wonderful night, everybody.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.